welcome back to episode 2 of the Rain podcast. I'm James, and I'm very excited to be joined by, let's get this right first time now, the man who makes Mick Warner. Fuck, got it wrong. I'm going to include this bit as well. The man who knows his Mick Walls from his Mick Rocks, his Alex Petridis's from his Pete Perfidis's, and his Sean Rowley's from his Gary Crowley's is Richard.
Nice. That's very good.
You like that one?
That is very good. Are you gonna top that next week?
Well, it's all I've been thinking about for a week. I haven't done any work, haven't looked after my children, but I came up with that, so I'm pleased.
How you doing, JC?
I'm all right. I'm good. This new venture is forcing me to listen to lots of music that I wouldn't necessarily listen to all the time, which has been good fun, actually. And it's sort of put me back into a very different place. Like you mentioned last week, that the sort of the spur for this was, you know, that article about turning 33 and, you know, when do you give up on new music? And I said, it's been really interesting to sort of get back into new music and actually trying to, knowing I'm going to have to talk about it, giving it a chance. You know what I mean? Because I'm a sort of person that just goes, nah, don't like it, off, you know, let's put the Beatles back on. And so it's been not necessarily pleasant, but actually quite rewarding.
Yeah, I know what you mean. We'll no doubt come onto it, and I think you'll probably know which one I'm talking about. When we were kind of talking about things discussed this week, there's one album I kind of thought, oh God, I probably wasn't going to listen to that, but I listened to it. And it's 38 minutes of my life I won't get back. But I know what you're saying. It does encourage you to think and listen differently, I guess. It's kind of the point. Yeah, it's kind of the point of the exercise, really. And yeah, actually think of things to say as opposed to going, oh, that's all right, you know, which will no doubt do at points anyway. But I know what you mean. It keeps on your toes, doesn't it? You're already constantly thinking about it, thinking, oh, we must remember to discuss that, or must make a note of that. And I started with the ambition of going, right, I'll keep on top of it. And keep a spreadsheet and a list and stuff, but everything happens so fast. You know what I mean? Everything comes out quickly. For example, it hasn't been officially announced, but and we're probably going to talk about it. I'm sure we'll talk about it near the time. But you know, the kind of unofficial announcement of the Revolver box set, that still hasn't kind of officially been announced by the Beatles, but it's being listed and stuff. And last week there was a Blondie box set, which I said to you was kind of probably too big to kind of. To dip into it, well, sorry, to tuck into in a week or so. A lot going on. It's good. It's good. I say, trying to keep on toes and keep on desk with it. But keeping abreast of it, it's harder than I probably thought.
Yes. Yeah. There's a lot going on. Especially when you spend big chunks of your time going to music festivals, as you tend to do quite regularly. So you were at Reading this week.
I was. Yeah. I was only there for one day. Because, for various reasons, there wasn't really anything that appealed to me on the Friday or the Sunday at the lineup. But the Saturday, I mean, to be honest, it was mainly just the Arctic Monkeys, but there was a lot else on the Saturday that was good. I mean, who did we see? We saw Running Through the Day, saw the Sherlocks, who are fine. I mean, we've got the Cortinas. I don't know why we need another one, but they're all right, you know, inoffensive. Sure, they're nice lads. The Skinner Brothers in the Preston Republic tent, who put on a good show. God bless them. They're kind of battering down doors and they're kind of relentlessly doing as much as they possibly can for exposure. They're proper like DIY band. They were good. Then who was it? The Lathams, who have been quite quiet this year, actually, after last year's kind of big push around the band, big hype around the band, and obviously the album getting to number one. I think to myself, they've been quite quiet this year, although I have now since seen they've got, I think they've finished recording their second album. They were really good. I mean, the guitarist, I think Scott, he's amazing. Like, he looks about 12, but he's got some like proper like Nick McCabe, you know, atmospheric axe sky kissing chops, which you don't kind of think of with them as a band, really. But they're quite like muscular musically, which I was kind of, I'd forgotten about. I saw them live about a year ago, but I'd forgotten that. And the singer Alex has got such a good voice. Do you know much of the Lathams?
Yeah, well, they were on my radar because there's the Twitter account Mainly Oasis, and he was all over them, you know. And I think he's actually their manager, or he was for a while. Now they're signed and everything. I don't know if he is anymore, but so they were getting a really big push just through his account because he's, you know, he had a crazy amount of followers. And if you follow Mainly Oasis, like, yeah, it's fine. He puts out kind of the same few Oasis videos over and over again and asks pretty obvious questions. I would say, you know, the better follow if you want Oasis news and stuff is Stop Crying Your Heart Out, Louise's Twitter. She's brilliant on the Oasis side. But anyway, mainly he's, so I was all over their kind of early stuff because of that. And they did really get a big sort of hype. And it was really exciting that we were seeing like this DIY, this band come from literally nothing. And they were so young as well. And just their first few videos and recordings, it was like, wow, this is like the first, probably maybe since Arctic Monkeys, you know, going back to Arctic Monkeys when we talk about them in a bit, you know, they had that DIY thing of suddenly this band was coming up and it really felt like, oh, okay, is this the rise of the next one? And then it sort of took a long time, it felt, for the album to come through. And then it did come through and go to number one, but it was one of those like number ones, like a lot of bands get number ones, like the Snuts got a number one, but it's like, you know, in reality, okay, they managed to sell 1,000 vinyls or whatever, and that was enough, but they didn't get that major breakthrough. But then, you know, to be fair, they've played big venues and they've, you know, they are very successful, but they're very successful in the indie world. Yeah. But no, I do like them. I like their stuff. I like their first sort of couple of EPs and things that they put out, and then when the album came out, I listened to it a couple of times. It wasn't the step on that I was hoping it would be. I thought it was good, and I thought it shows promise. But I was hoping for a skyscraping, you know, once in a generation debut, and it wasn't that for me.
Yeah, agreed. Yeah, I think their momentum was kind of curtailed by the pandemic because they were kind of making quite a lot of waves in like 2019, and then also 2020 happened. And I think they were kind of quite curtailed by that. And I think they were quite creative, and they did a few live streams and stuff like that of shows to kind of keep things ticking along, but also using the time to, yeah, record the first album. I know what you're saying. I mean, I do remember when the album came out, I think it was, obviously it would come out on the Friday, and I think it was the Monday, they did like a deluxe version of the album with 5 or 6 extra tracks, like in the same week. And it's like, that is pretty, again, like we were saying last week, that is pretty cynical play to like get a number one. I'm sure I could be wrong. I'm sure it was in the same week. And that kind of left a bit of a sour taste with me, to be honest. It's kind of like, oh, okay, I can't remember who they're signed to, but yeah, they're using little tricks like that to get the number one, as you say, and you know, various vinyl packages and stuff like that left a bit of a sour taste. But like I say, they're very, like I say, muscular is the word I can think of live. They've got a few good tunes. They've played a couple of at least one new song, which kind of bodes quite well for the future. And yeah, so they're kind of, like I say, shooting the cover for their album quite soon. So yeah, it'll be interesting to see where they step on. But yeah, they were really good live. Say my name when you're cursed by doubt. Say my name when the lights go out. And then Fontaine's DC, who are going about playing every single festival in the Western Hemisphere, I think. I mean, that's it's the third time I've seen them this summer. It could have been the fourth, but I chose not to see them at Glastonbury because I knew I was going to see them at 1,000 other places. They didn't show any signs of rustiness. They still sounded pretty on it. The moving towards the bigger stages, or the moving to bigger stages, is suiting them. I think their sound's big enough to kind of contain it to control it and go with it. They mix the set list up all the time, which is good. So every time I've seen them, it's been a different set, so that must be obviously quite good for them. You probably would have seen they brought on the 16-year-old to play guitar. Did you see that?
Yeah, I'm not a big fan of that.
No?
I'm not a big fan of that. It's like when football teams bring on their kids at the end to celebrate. No, not having it. Like, I know Alex at Glastonbury or whatever, and then, you know, and then now it's become like a regular thing. I'm like, get them off. You know what I mean? Would Nirvana have that? Would Oasis have that? Nah. not cool. So anyway, I'm sure it would have been lovely for the kid, but no, I'm not having it.
Yeah, I know what you're saying. It feels like, yeah, Indy's now got its Alex from Glastonbury moment. I hear you, but by the same token, the shit-eating grin on his face, like, it was beautiful. Like, and for fair play, he absolutely smashed it as well. But yeah, I know what you mean. It's a little bit crowd-pleasing. It was surprised that they kind of did it. Fontaine's DC did it, because they're quite serious. Do you know what I mean? That kind of, I don't want to say pompous, but they obviously take themselves very seriously, and I wouldn't have thought that'd be in their, well, I wouldn't have thought that'd be the sort of thing they did, but they did. Mm. But yeah, they were great.
What's your name?
Dexter.
Right, give it up for Dexter, yeah?
Wolf Alice were sub-headlining. I like Wolf Alice. I think Ellie's got a great voice. They've got a good sound. They can be properly quite like gnarly sometimes. There's some like dirty rocking, kind of almost grungy stuff sometimes. They seem to be, everyone's always saying something, oh, they'll be headliners next. They're future headliners, they're future headliners. And they seem to have plateaued at that point. And I was thinking about it. And then at one point during the set, Ellie, they did an acoustic number, and she was like, right, who's up for a sing-along? And the sing-along didn't come. And it was like, maybe they just don't have the songs. Maybe they just don't have like the hits or the proper headline songs, really. And I think that's probably maybe lacking. And they've got everything else. They'll say they're good live. You know, they won the Mercury. They're a good band. They're just, I think that might be what's missing for them. That's just my take, obviously. I'm sure fans there would say otherwise, that they've got plenty of tunes, but I think they seem to plateau at where they're at.
Yeah, no, I know what you mean. I think I really like them. They're probably one of my favourite bands. Saying it through a period where I haven't listened to a lot of new music, they're one of the ones that really has come through, and I've really enjoyed their stuff. And they've been on on Radio One. With Young Jordan, I end up listening to a lot of Radio One, unfortunately, most of the time, and it's really great to hear Wolf Alice on Radio One. And they've had that song. I can't remember the name of the song, but like the Being in LA song, I can't remember what it's called. Yeah. But yeah, that was really, I think about three times I was like, oh yeah, I really like this. Who is it? Oh, it's Wolf Alice. And then like 3 weeks later, I'd hear it again. Oh, I really like this. Who is it? Oh, it's Wolf Alice.
Yeah.
But it's always like, oh, a new band. Oh no, it's a band I already like. Okay, fine. That's annoying. It would have been nice to have another new band I liked, but I suppose we'll Delicious be discovering things, those as we go.
Delicious Things, I think, is the song.
Delicious Things. Yeah, Delicious Things. You got it. Yeah, you got it. And so I think that's their biggest tune. I don't know about chart performance or whatever, but yeah, that was the one that as a Radio One listener, not by choice, had the biggest, the biggest impact. And I suppose it was the most poppy, with that big chorus. That was really, and it's got that sort of whispery kind of rapped kind of verses and things as well, which sort of quite of the mainstream. So it would be great to see them. Yeah. If they do with the next album, take a big step up and move to headline status. But yeah, I know what you mean. It's like, it's not like they're an act that if they put them on as a headline, people would go, okay, all right, well, I'll go and see them. I'm sure it'd be a great show. But it's not like, someone like Florence, when she broke through and then she got a headline, it was like, okay, yep, makes sense. Florence should be headlining. So, and I know there is a push to get more women and people of colour into headlining roles. And as festivals have become so much more inclusive with it not just being old white fellas like us going, you know, then you're seeing far more different types of bands and acts in these festivals now. So yeah, I'm sure there is sort of more of a push to get someone like Wolf Alice up there, you know, and if they did, I'm sure they'd do a great job. Some guy is taking me into his garden. Seems to be some kind of mountain. I'm socially anxious and a long way from home. I've only just learned my margarita from Molito. So, could I belong here? The vibes are kind of strong here. Ask me if I'm from here and I won't say no. Another one in that world, actually, is it was reminded because one of our Oasis podcast guys is going to see them, is the Big Moon. When their debut album came out, I thought they were absolutely brilliant, and I just basically because they like sound like Elastica and Sleeper, and they kind of have that Britpoppy sound, and so I was like, yes, this is the next one, this is the new one. And I saw them at Truck Festival, and I was like, yeah, this is going to be the band. And then same again. I mean, well, they're less as well. They've just not kicked on, which is a real shame because I think they're super talented, beautiful sound, you know, great singer, really, you know. But anyway, they're still around. They're still making good music. It's just a shame that they, for them, really, they haven't had that jump up.
Yeah. Yeah, it's a good point you make about Warband. It's like, I don't think anyone would be surprised if they were the headline. Like, I think it's a sort of, I mean, they're probably at the level that, you know, Glastonbury could take a punt on them. And I think everyone went, yeah, it's fair enough, you got the juice, but I sense that's why they're not, but that's could just be my. I mean, that very, very likely just to be my opinion. But I mean, yeah, as I say, they were all nice aperitifs for the day, but it was all, and you could sense it in the air. It was all anyone was talking about. It was absolutely rammed. I've never seen Reading Festival so busy for Arctic Monkeys' first UK gig in nearly 4 years.
Yeah,
and it was a masterclass of how to do a headline set. Like, there's if I was being picky, I'd like them to change the first and last songs. Like, they open with Do I Want to Know and they finish with Are You Mine. They've been doing that for quite a while now, best part of 10 years. I quite like to mix that up. However, they work, you know. They've just obviously announced their new album, but this was last week and there was no new material to be heard from yet, so you're not going to do a headline set to do that. It was very much a kind of comeback, a summary of the story so far, right? This is you know, this is everything we've done. This is why you love us, and now on to the next album. But it was, as I say, it was a masterclass. Something for everyone. Like, a lot of hits as they've got, but a lot of kind of like deeper cuts as well. For example, they played That's Where You're Wrong from Suck It and See, and I don't think they massively played that live when the album came out. And that's my favorite track on the album. So, you know, for something for the kind of the older school fans like me. And when I say old, I mean that literally when you're talking about Reading Festival, because they get younger every year. but that's also another interesting thing is, like, you know, they've been going for like 17 years, and I regard them as not quite my generation. You know, I was early 20s when they came out, but they had that one generation defining first album, and then 8 years later, or whatever it was, on their fifth album, they had AM, which has now brought them to another generation, and that kind of fan base is even more rabid than perhaps the old indie hacks like us. And it's interesting to see. Like, I can't think of many other bands who've done that on their, you know, first and fifth albums at two kind of different, you know, 8-10 years apart for two different kind of sets of music bands. It's quite remarkable, really. Because you kind of think of them, I say, as a kind of old indie band, but they're not. They're kind of, I mean, they're not musically, but they're. The adulation that Alex Turner gets, for example, is quite, you know, teeny boppery almost at points. Yeah. But anyway, I digress. But yeah, as I say, masterclass for headline set. They're still, you know, Matt Helders is the best drummer of his generation, maybe even of any generation. He's that good. I love everything about the Mighty Monkeys. I think they've got a lot. It was a proper pro kind of professional set that was interesting enough to keep it fresh, I guess.
And talking about the generations and stuff, apparently, as I'm not a big TikTok person, but apparently, like, they've been massive on TikTok in the last few years, and certain tracks, like, I think 505 is a big track on TikTok, and so hence it's a big track, you know, for anyone that loves music, because it's an absolutely brilliant track and one of the It's one of my favorites of theirs. Probably one of my favorite songs of the last sort of 20 years. I love it. But yeah, it's a big one. And so that one, I think if that happened to have got a massive reception from the youngsters, Richard, that's probably why it's a big one on TikTok, apparently.
Thank you very much, Reddy. It's the Arctic Monkeys. I'm going back to 505. If it's a 7-hour flight or a 45-minute drive, in my imagination, waiting lying on your side, with your hands between your thighs. Stopping me to say, when you look at me like that, my darling, what did you expect?
I've got to say that one, I do like it, and it's got a great build, it kicks in, but I always compare it to A Certain Romance, like the closing of the first album. I've much prefer that.
Yeah.
But yeah, that's just personal taste. And also, it was one of those sets where they left a lot out. And you're coming out afterwards going, oh, they didn't play Mardi Bum or whatever, When the Sun Goes Down or Don't Sit Down to Move Your Chair. And you're like, they've just got so many songs now, you know, an outstanding back catalogue, I would say.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was, very, very good. That's all I say. I mean, did you watch any of it?
No, I haven't watched any of it, actually. That's one of those. I know I've clocked that a few of them have popped up on YouTube, but I don't know if the whole set available.
No, so basically they didn't, at the artist's request, they didn't show it on Saturday night at all. And then they played, there's a highlights package of about an hour, to be fair, on the iPlayer now, which I think they showed on Sunday night. Which has got, it's got quite a few omissions, and obviously the new song they played wasn't included, which, unlike this new single, which we'll obviously come on to, is quite like Young Americans, kind of slinky, kind of 70s kind of Bowie vibe. I ain't quite where I think I am, I think it's cool. But the iPlayer package is pretty comprehensive in terms of what you'd want. I mean, they didn't play a few tracks off Humbug, but you know, they're not
everyone's favourite, are they? Yeah. And the only criticism I saw was that he didn't do much banter, but they've never really done much banter. You know, they said, I remember that the headline show they did years ago, I think it was Reading or Glastonbury. I can't remember which one, but they were very young. In between the songs, he would be like, thank you, ladies and gentlemen. This next song, ladies and gentlemen. And it was like, it was lovely because it had that kind of, because they're, you know, Sheffield lads, and it was like working men's club. You know, they've always had the fact they dress up and stuff, and you know, they'll turn up at award ceremonies in different outfits, or they'll have a different kind of style, especially Alex, for each different album as they kind of almost reinvent themselves. And we talked about Coldplay last year. Coldplay kind of did that as well. You know, they sort of have a different look, you know, for different albums, which is I've got no problem with. But with their last one, the Tranquility Hotel or whatever, people were like, oh, this is, you know, a lot of people were very negative on that album, or like, it shouldn't have been Arctic Monkeys, it should have been a separate, another side project or whatever. I could have seen it being another side project, but it's like, well, and people are like, some people can be very negative about Alex and say like, oh, he's arrogant or he's this or he's, I think he plays a character, you know, he plays a character when he's doing those songs, you know, when he's doing this kind of croon. And you know, on the new single as well, which you can talk about, but they've always had that thing of like playing little characters and stuff, and I've got no issue with him being like a crooner. You know, we talked about Reverend of the Makers last week, and he's sort of, you know, rev crooning through the new single, and yeah, I've got no problem with that. You know, why not try and different characters? And like we said, Bowie did it, and if this is going to be their kind of Young Americans, you know, it's amazing how Bowie transformed himself into the, you know, from the Thin White Duke and then into this kind of the soul kind of, I don't know if that character had a name actually, the Young Americans era, but it was like Soul Boy USA or something, wasn't it? But I don't know.
It was kind of, I think it was mainly, kind of a start of the Thin White Duke, I guess, because, who kind of saw it through to station to station. I think that was kind of that it, that first couple of years. Like, he didn't, he kind of opted out the kind of the Ziggy Stardust, and like, it was more, these were monikers that were given to him as opposed to, well, I say that he did reference it, you know, in his own tune. But yeah, I know, so it's, but then like, but, 10 years ago when Alex Turner was doing the kind of faux American thing, that was quite annoying. But when he, when they kind of started out, he was quite very shy and very humble, and he could see they didn't, they didn't like the fame. You know, that's not that didn't work for them, and I think it took them a long time to work out how to use it to their benefit. And I think, like you say, I think Alex Turner decided about to just adopt a stage persona, which is a kind of bit, you know, a showy kind of frontman. But I don't think that's him. Like, I don't, from what we know of him, I don't think that's in his nature. I think he just, it's very much a persona, you know, almost like a protected barrier. That seems to have gone a little bit now. I certainly noticing on Saturday, there wasn't much chat. But yeah, it's kind of damned if you, I think he's in that position where he's damned if you do, damned if you don't. So, I mean, if he says too much, he would annoy the likes of me because for American accent. If it says too little, he's moody, you know, and it's, you know, to use obvious references, certain other bands would never say anything on stage and they wouldn't get necessarily cried for it. But going back to what you're saying as well, like the various different personas as well, that's why they're so good, right? Because what band had their biggest success with AM? You know, it's a monster album in America, huge. They toured it for ages. They probably made a success out of it. Got them hugely mainstream rock band, and then they did the most subversive thing they could do. They made like a piano jazz space lounge album. Do you know what I mean? When they've got this huge audience, I think that's, to me, is why they're so good. It's like, because that's the sort of thing that Radiohead do. Do you know what I mean? Like, that's artists rather than bands, and I think that's brilliant. I just think it's great. Like, they'll follow their muse regardless, and they won't just, you know, there's been a bit of backlash about this new single. It's like, oh, I wish to go back to the AM period. Whenever I hear that, I go, well, now you know, now you AMers know how we feel. I wish they go back to the way people say AM. But it is, but they're never going to be that again. You know, and you'll always have the live shows, but they're clearly never going to go back to that style. And that's, you know, you wouldn't want them to, I don't think. Well, if you respect artists, you shouldn't want them to.
Yeah. Yeah. And there's not like, you know, a complete departure. It's not like they're making, you know, Afro-Celt hip hop. You know, this is a variation of that. It's just, it's more of a loungy kind of croony variation of that, I suppose, rather than, I mean, there's a lot of the AM has got that. It's just, it was a bit more of a, I don't know, a bit more of a rock sound. And then you had a few songs like Arabella and things like that, that were, had those sort of bigger, louder moments, but it remains to be seen. You know, we'll have to see what this album is, but yeah, I mean, what did you think of the single?
I love it. I think the one of the things with the Tranquility Base Hotel and Casino is that it's very inaccessible. You know, you probably had to live with it and give it time and give it many repeated listens. I think this one is a lot more accessible. It's still, obviously, I say, in very much the same vein. As soon as the piano kicks in, like, right, okay, we're still in that genre. And it's quite funny, you know, they remind people what a rocking band they are with the greatest hit set on the weekend at Reading and Leeds. And it's like, right, so here's our new one. And it's, you know, piano crooning, I say piano kind of swooning ballad. I think the strings are lush. It's quite sad. I think it's actually quite moving, quite elegant in a way that perhaps they haven't been before. And it's just, Alex Turner's so clever. Like, that title, There'd Better Be a Miracle, that you automatically think, okay, that conjures up an idea of, well, when you go in with the lyrics, it kind of comes up this kind of sadness of, you know, someone, I presume, that it's someone being taken out against their will to have to go out or whatever. And it's just, I don't know, there's just something so kind of, that kind of evokes the mood in itself before the song even does. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I agree. And I really liked it. I thought it was a beautiful song. And he's a poet. You know, he is. He can, you know, there's so many of their songs have got kind of multiple layers in the lyrics and things. And you can just enjoy them for the music, or you can actually dig into them and kind of really try and break them down and think about it. But I just love, like, it's almost metatextual when he's like, I know I promised this is what I wouldn't do, but somehow giving it the old romantic fool seems to better suit the mood. It's like, well, hold on here. So he's talking about the story of the song, you know, this person that's going off to this place, but he wants to be a more old-fashioned rather than, I don't know, going to a more modern place. But But yeah, it's also a comment on the band as well, is the way I've read it anyway, because, you know, he could have gone back to a, you know, a sleazy or more modern rock sound, but no, they're sticking with this kind of more, this sort of quieter, more croony.
I know I promised this is what I wouldn't do, but somehow giving it the old romantic fool seems to better suit the mood. So if you wanna walk me to the car, you ought to know I'll have a heavy heart.
But you know, going back to it, I always remember when they won the Mercury and Richard Hawley was up for the Mercury as well. Do you remember? He said,
Somebody 999, Richard Hawley's been robbed.
Richard Hawley's been robbed. And so they've always had that sort of crooniness, and he's always had that in his, you know, in his locker. It's just in the earlier albums, I think there was a lot more guitars around it. But yeah, so that's his underlying songwriting has often been that, but then they've just sort of beefed up the music around it. Whereas it just feels like they're kind of saying, no, let's more focus on the songs. Let's not have as many of these sort of stronger, like instrumental sections and things, which, you know, yeah, I love those stronger instrumental sections. You know, that's really one of the great things about them for me, is that you can have these lovely melodies and clever lyrics and all these beautiful things, and then suddenly you're just like bam, you know, and you're going off in another direction, and like you said, Matt's such a great drummer and the guitars, and whoa, off we go, and then we're back to the, you know, and they've got that they can do the croons, they can do the post-punk wiry stuff, they can do the more 70s rock, they can just do everything really. And yet, you know, and yet we've got some idiots online who are hung up on the fact that they've got a stupid name, and the singer's a bit of an idiot. But
I mean, let's not even go into the stupid name thing. Do you know what I mean? Like, we're here all day. Yeah. You know, one could argue the Beatles isn't a great name, and so on and so on. But so yeah, that's a bit daft. But and Alex Turner's, he's not to everyone's taste, but as you say, he's an artist. You know, and. Yeah, he comes across a bit of an idiot, but which indie rock stars aren't idiots in someone's eyes? You know what I mean? There's no, you can't even start on that. And like I say, I just think they're hugely underrated, if anything, just for the various reasons you kind of outlined. But the talent. My real concern is that they don't waste Matt Helders again, because I think he probably was a bit wasted on Tranquility Base. But granted, as you say, the songs didn't necessarily warrant it. But I do. Like, because he's so good, I do think. I hope he gets a bit more to do on the new album on the car. But
got you.
We'll see.
Wonderful. Cool. All right. Well, that's good. Similar to last week when you'd been to All Points East and I'd been to Butlins. This week you've went to Reading Festival and I was at the Proms. I went to a. Because I'm very cultured and into classical music, because I'm super clever. But no, this was the Earth Prom, and just get off piste. Obviously, it's not rock, alternative, indie, although there is a couple of tie-ins actually. So this was the Earth Prom. So it was basically music from the David Attenborough Natural History Unit series, which is brilliant, you know, which is beautiful. And so it was some sort of more historic stuff. And then they also had because Hans Zimmer's team has done the more recent stuff, and actually Hans Zimmer turned up. Which is an incredible kind of moment. So he turned up. He didn't end up, I was hoping he'd conduct, but he didn't end up conducting. He left that to the Scottish Symphony Orchestra who did it. But yeah, he just turned up and had a bit of a chat with the crowd and then hugged everyone and then went off again. But you know, it was pretty magic to have him there. And and there is an Indie Stroke Oasis link, which is there's a song, the upcoming series is, I think it's Blue Planet 2, or might be Frozen Planet, anyway, I don't know, whatever the upcoming series is, they had there's a piece of music from that that Hans Zimmer's co-written with a pop star. I can't remember who the pop star is actually, but I remember thinking like, oh, Camila Cabello, that's it, it's written with Camila Cabello, and I was like, okay, it's gonna be rubbish. And then the person that came out to sing it and who sings it on the thing is a Norwegian singer called Aurora. Now, here you go, Oasis expert. What is Aurora's connection to Oasis?
Maybe she did a cover. I'm not sure.
You got it? You got it?
Yes.
She's a Norwegian singer. She did the cover of Half the World Away on the John Lewis advert.
Oh, good.
Yeah.
And when I leave this island, I book myself into a soul asylum. I can feel the warning signs running around my mind. So here I go, I'm still scratching around in the same old hole. My body feels young, but my mind is very old. So what do you say? You can't give me the dreams that are mine anyway. You're half the world away. You're half the world away.
So she's got the kind of the... that sort of whispery kind of Nordic voice, but then also can hit these huge high notes. And she also did, she did like the high notes on like Frozen 2 and things like that. But anyway, she's an amazing singer, but she was really good. But yeah, overall, it was a really good night. It was incredible kind of to see the, you know, I do enjoy a bit of, you know, classical music, the more mainstreamy stuff, to be honest. But yeah, that was good fun. Anyway, so there we go. There's James's non-indie music review for the week. Should we talk about, or is there any other news jumping out to you, or should we talk about a couple of singles?
I mean, there's, I'm sure it's not something we want to really discuss, but Arcade Fire have obviously been in the headlines this week. I noticed this morning that the support have pulled out of the UK for their tour. It would be interesting to see if that carries on. But yeah, obviously we don't really want to go into the details. It's horrendous.
Well, I was just going to say on the Arcade Fire, because I did think we'll bring this up. I think we'll do a section for this called the Wrongens Bin. So we've got someone new to put in the Wrongens Bin, which is your fellow from Arcade Fire. Get in the bin.
In you go, win.
Yeah. Win, that's it. Win. Win in the bin. You know, without digging into it, because it's not really what this is all about, but the apology. Just if you've done wrong, just shut up. You know, I've done wrong, shut up. The apologies made it 100 times worse. You know what I mean?
And his wife's in the band. Yeah. Do you know what I mean? Like, it's... I mean, that sort of behaviour is unforgivable. You know, obviously, but it's just, yeah, when you actually, like I say, when his wife being in the band and stuff like that, you've got like proper liberty taker, basically. Like, I know that sounds, you know, that's a very, very, you know, soft way of doing it, but it's also a soft way of saying it. But you just kind of think that, and yeah, and then the apology, which wasn't an apology. And
yeah,
yeah, I think, yeah, huge amount of damage to their brand, I would say.
Yeah.
And right,
Win, get in the wrongins bin. Next up, go on. So what other music news?
Gorillaz announced the new album this week, which is coming in January, and they released a new single with Tame Impala, which is quite good. Just to say, like, Damon Albarn, like, when does the guy sleep? Do you know what I mean? Like, I'm not sure, has he released an album this year? Actually, he might not have. This might be one of the few years that goes past me, hasn't he? But that said, I know Gorillaz have done extensive touring. There's talk about Blur next year.
Hyde Park, they're saying. No, they were saying Hyde Park for 2024, weren't they? To coincide with Park Life.
Oh, okay. I mean,
30th for Park Life.
Do they need to do Hyde Park again? Like, I don't. Yeah, I think what made 2009 so special was the fact it was obviously it was their first comeback, but it felt like a one-off. And then they came back and played Hyde Park 3 years later. You know,
yeah.
I'd wish that they would do somewhere different, but... Just Damon Albarn's publicity is absolutely mad. Are you into Gorillaz?
Yeah, I do like Gorillaz. I saw, it was probably my favourite gig of whatever year it was I saw it. It's while I've been doing the pod, so it might was probably well, it would have been 2019 because it was obviously it wasn't gigs in 2020. So either 18 or 19, I saw them at Birmingham Academy, and it was one of the best gigs I've ever seen. I thought they were amazing. And for me, when I listen to their music, as I said, I do like some hip hop, but the hip hop based songs tend to, you know, with the guest artists, tend to be my least favorites on the album. You know, my preferred, I would love for Damon to just do like an album of like just his own songs, just really good, not messed around, not too demos based, but just really good, like a lush, because I just love him as a songwriter. I think he's an absolute genius. And so when they're so, you've got these nubs of his songs so covered up by everything else, I always almost think it's a bit of a shame. But that said, I do enjoy it. I've enjoyed all their albums and I like them. It's just that the, you know, the more heavy, when it basically it could be the featured artist, just a song by them. And then it just so happens that Gorillaz are in the background. Mm. But seeing them live, the songs with the featured artists were my favorites. I thought they were absolutely incredible. And, you know, it was just such a great vibe. And Damon just seemed so happy on stage. You just got this incredible collective of musicians around him. You know, you've got your man, whose name escapes me, who is in BDI. Who's brilliant. You know, and you've got like it's just such a powerful unit. This band was just incredible. And you could just see he's just got this massive grin, you know, bigger than the fella that got on stage with Fontaine's DC. You know, he's just so happy just looking around himself. Like, he just obviously loves it so much. He just loves music. Yeah, so I don't always love all their albums, every single track, but I think just the level of inventiveness and over the years has just been remarkable.
Mm. Yeah, I agree. I think one issue I think with them is sometimes they're a little bit what's the word I'm looking for? Frail's not the word. A little bit lightweight. Like sometimes the musicianship, you say, like the keyboard, he kind of opts for is it feels a little bit like you just wish. I don't know. I wish the sound was a bit rounder, just a bit more fuller. Kind of, or more, I mean, like more was emphasis on the bass, essentially. Like the one they did with Peter Hook a couple of years ago, Aries, that's great. Obviously, it's Peter Hook playing bass. And this new one with Tame Impala is quite bass heavy. And the sound, I prefer that sound. I don't like their default kind of, I say a bit lightweight sound. But I mean, there's inevitably going to be, there's inevitably going to be genius on it because it's Damon Albarn. So look forward to that. That aside, news has kind of been quite quiet week, actually. I was thinking, like, there's not been a huge amount. I guess it's like everyone, you know. Battering down before they go back to school, I guess.
Yeah, absolutely. Watch out from the coast, Paul Revere. We all play a part in the devil's chair. Run to the hills because the end is near. All right, so it's obviously we talked about the new Arctic Monkeys single there. There's been a couple more interesting kind of singles in our kind of world, our rock alternative and indie world. So a big one, I suppose, in terms of like new bands, I suppose they're relatively new. I think they've been around for a little while now, is the Amazons. Who have had a new single, and I actually spotted it been playlisted. I think it was only a C list or something, but I actually got playlisted on Radio One, which I was quite surprised by, because it's rare that indie bands kind of get onto that playlist. What did you think of it? What did you think of them?
I quite liked the first album with them, and I didn't like much. Well, I heard the second album; they're a bit. They're a bit generic, I find. They're a bit like, I think Royal Blood, actually, I suppose probably Arctic Monkeys to a lesser great extent, but I think Royal Blood have kind of got a lot to answer for. There's a lot of bands like that are kind of big riffs, but kind of with a bit of a pop sheen.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? And this one, what's it called? How Will I Know?
There's How Will I Know, but then there's also There's a Light is the new one.
Okay. Yeah, okay. Yeah. I only listened to How Will I Know. I mean, it's they've probably gone like heart on sleeve, song kind of stuff. I think it's big. I don't want to say ballady, but you know, certainly pulling on emotive strings, which I've got to say, I don't recall much of that from their first album. It's okay. I didn't love it. I don't know that it'll make me want to listen to the album anymore, But you know, it's always good to see rock bands doing well. But yeah, not what I was expecting, but also not particularly for me. Can't shake the mouth, leading to nowhere. He said, how will I call out? Heaven will find me. Everything I've lost, all that I might be. There's a change in the way we talk.
Yeah, similar. I think that the it's sort of a similar point, really, to when we were talking about the DMAs last week, in that I think there's a lot of bands have got this kind of, you know, whether they're bringing in producers or what, that you need this sort of big anthemic sound, you know, to sort of try and get that mainstream breakthrough. And so, and if they've been playlist on Radio 1, then maybe that's worked. But yeah, I just don't really like it. It sort of feels a bit... forced, or not forced, but contrived, when it's like, is that really the sound that you want to make? If you're four guys in a room making this sound, I don't think it would come out like that. That feels like it's gone through the kind of the sort of the record company smush to get it out there and go for the mainstream appeal, which, you know, it doesn't really doesn't work for me. But then, you know, that said, from the Oasis world, I mean, Liam's stuff has definitely had that, you know, and I've been okay with it in a lot of cases. But I think there's been some very strong songs. I think it's got a, you know, as I said, both There's a Light and How Will I Know have got that kind of big sound. Big, and they've even got like big choruses and things, but they just, yeah, they haven't grabbed me as much. So we shall see what happens with them. Maybe they'll come back with an incredible album and, you know, it'll blow us all away. But yeah, indie, what is it? Indie also runs for me.
Yeah, it's they do have a weird, yeah, since you say they do get quite a lot of attention. I think that's because they kind of, they've got that pop rock thing. I think they've kind of got down to a T, which, as I say, rock music, but kind of popish melodies. And like you were saying, it's, the producer's probably got their hands on it. The A&R man or whatever's probably got their hands on it. It doesn't inspire me to listen to the album, to be honest. I'm not, not maybe particularly excited for it. It's a bit too, as you say, contrived and generic. I found it.
Yeah. Sorry, guys. I won't be clipping this out and tagging them. Three of our Britpop heroes have come back with singles as well. We've had Suede and also Tim Burgess and Danny Goffey from Supergrass have all got singles out this week. What do you think?
Do you know what? I was thinking about this with Suede. They've somehow, I reckon you probably only say this also for the Manics as well, although less so. They've somehow managed to remain credible while still sounding the same 30 years on. Do you know what I mean? You listen to, I think, is it 15 again, the new single? And you're like, I mean, maybe it's because Brett's got such a distinctive voice, but they've got those, you know, the kind of slidey, icy guitar sounds that they've kind of that is uniquely them. But it does, you kind of listen to it and go, that's could be from the 90s and you wouldn't bat an eyelid. It's obviously it's still good, and like I say, they're quite they've got a lot of kind of critical acclaim now. Do you know what I mean? I think the last album was pretty well acclaimed, and it's funny, and it's a great tune, it's a good song, makes me listen to the album. But it's, I just find it fascinating that, yeah, I say only them and the Manics can probably get away with that now. It's like still sounding largely the same. I mean, the Manics, they've done a lot of experimentation, I'd say more than Suede. They, you know, kind of come back to that trio rock, that trio of guitar, bass and drums. But it's just, I just find it fascinating. But yeah, the song itself is great. What do you think of it?
Yeah, you know what? I'm not the biggest Suede fan in the world. I've talked about it on the Oasis podcast a bit, but I've always had issues with Brett's voice. And so in the 90s, I just was like, nah, not for me. But then over the years, then I've gone back and enjoyed them. I don't like the Coming Up album. I never liked that, the Coming Up album. But then the stuff with Bernard Butler. Sorry?
That's sacrilege, isn't it?
No, I've never liked it. You know, films, and Saturday Night. I think it was when he was at his most Brett with his voice, with his vocalizations. That's probably got the highest percentage of ahas on it, which I've just, when he does that, I just go like, oh, you know, and I just sort of, you know, She's in Fashion and Saturday Night and all of those, I was just like, I've never liked coming up. I really like the first two with Bernard. I think the first two with Bernard, his guitars is just incredible. And, you know, the songs I think are really good. Brett's Brettness kind of puts me on edge a little bit, but I can cope with it because the songs are so good. Yeah. Whereas with this, I think this is the strongest stuff they've done since the first two albums. So from the upcoming, I think it's called Autofiction, the album that's going to come out, you've got That Boy on the Stage, 15 Again, and She Still Leads Me On. And I've listened to them all quite a bit. At first, I had to say, is that a different singer? Because I think, although you said there, you know, his voice is distinctive, I think he's matured into his voice, or maybe he's just matured into himself. So he's not being so British now. But I really, really like this. I think it's big and grand and powerful, and the structures are great. His singing I really like. And yeah, if I heard this come on the radio, I'd be like, wow, who's that? You know what I mean? Whereas the stuff I've heard from Suede and The Tears in the last sort of 10 years, and I haven't listened to every single album, I've gone, okay, they're still going. You know, whereas this, for the first time, wow, this is great. You know, so I'm really taken aback by them, actually.
Okay, interesting. I mean, I think if you like this, I'm only basing this on the same three songs that you've heard. If you like this, I'd recommend giving their Blood Sports album a go, which I think is 2013, I think, because that's like similar kind of, I get similar vibes from that. And I think the opening track from that, Barriers, it's always amazing. Brilliant. But that's quite interesting, because I just, with his voice, I can only ever be him to me. So it's interesting how we've got a different you look at it.
Well, I'll tell you what, like, with my editing, we're going to drop in a little bit from the new single and a little bit from some of his Aha era, and we'll see if you can, the listeners can make their choice. So yeah, then Tim Burgess got another single out, and which is it called Sure Enough?
Yeah,
yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Really liked it. I thought once again, this is like, it's like, I'm so pleased to be kind of actually listening to all this new music, because I thought it was really beautiful song. It was very reminiscent of a couple of things. It was very reminiscent of You Were Right by Badly Drawn Boy, for me, the melody. And I love that song, You Were Right. He kind of repeats the same melody line throughout the verse. Na 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 na, na 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 na. And it sort of felt a bit like that. Okay, all right. But it's similar to that, but not close enough that you go, oh, rip off. But it just had that same vibe. But no, I thought it had a lovely kind of, you know, beautiful production. I think his voice suits the style of the song really well. And I just think, yeah, brilliant. Really pleased to see him kind of carrying on making great music.
Yeah, I mean, I think this will be his, what, fifth, sixth solo album, I think?
Wow.
I forget what exactly. It's a double album. Yeah, I mean, Tim Burgess is just one of the, you know, prior to that anyway, but ever since the listening parties, he's just been like the saviour of India, hasn't he? This one, I quite like it. I preferred the last one. I've got to say, Here Comes the Weekend, even though that's a little bit lightweight. But yeah, it certainly got me looking, interested in the album. And it's, let's say, it's a double album as well that he's got coming. So it'd be interesting to see because he's such a, well, you kind of gauge from his listening parties, he's such a musical magpie and lost kind of everything. It'd be interesting to see how that kind of transfers, because his previous albums have been quite traditional, not traditional in style, but they've had their own kind of style, like he did the first album, I believe, was quite kind of American, kind of rocky, and then there was an album, what was it called, back in 2016, same language, different worlds, which to be fair was a collaboration album. That's very electronic and stuff, so I'll be quite interested to see what goes on with this. But yeah, I mean, yeah, you can't dislike Timbo, just can you? Do you know what I mean?
No, absolutely. Yeah, and so you are more disposed to like him because of the fact you kept us all sane during lockdown.
Yeah.
And he's been, you know, such a great platform for so many people. But you know, so we love him.
Plain to see. The world is spinning way too fast. Catching up with my past. I need to climb up the mast just to help me see clear. This is not by any means my first rodeo. In fact, it could be my last final go. Feeling like I might drown, and I'm about to get.
And then Danny Goffey, I thought this was great. So the tune is called, is it We're All On Drugs or something?
I think, is it just drugs? I think it's that, but it's...
It is Everybody's On Drugs. I love this. I thought it was really good fun. Like, you know, it pounds along at a good pace, sort of similar, not too dissimilar to Supergrass. Obviously, it's going to have that. It's going to have that sort of feel to it. But, you know, very witty, very silly. It reminded me of like... Liam Lynch, United States of Whatever, you know, okay. It's kind of got that sort of tongue-in-cheekness about it, but actually it does, you know, have a bit of, you know, a bit of a political satirical edge to it because of the, you know, basically saying everyone's on drugs. But yeah, I just thought it was really, really good fun and a very pleasant way to spend 3 minutes and 30 seconds.
Yeah, I love the whole kind of the injury vibe he's got.
Yeah.
On it, you know, like quintessentially English.
Yeah.
Kind of style that's gone it, and yeah, it's similar with him. I think he did an album a few years ago, but like, yeah, what with him and Gaz doing kind of separate solo stuff, you kind of get a bit better picture of Supergrass, and yeah, you kind of think, okay, so he was, you know, as we always suspected, he is the lunatic and the very lighthearted one of the group, and this single kind of backs that up. But yeah, it's good. It's big dumb fun, isn't it?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And they've always had that. You know, that's always been a part of what they did, going back to like We're Not Supposed To. You know, being a 33 on 45 or whatever it was. That was just so good fun. But anyway, yeah, so really enjoyed that. So yeah, really, really great week for singles, I think. Some big albums out, and I know from the last week we talked about the podcast, Katie's podcast with Embrace, with Danny McNamara, and the Embrace album is now out there in the world, which is called something
How to Be a Person Like Other People?
Yeah, How to Be a Person Like Other People, which is apparently from the Joker film, which I didn't know. But
yeah.
Yeah, what do you think?
I like it. There's a lot on it, but it's a tricky one, isn't it? I guess because they're at the stage in their career they're at, they have got good people they want. But the title track, for example, which they acknowledge, you know, I've heard this in an interview, but like it is just basically the good will out. Do you know what I mean? Yeah. It's even with the na na na's and stuff like that. A little bit too derivative for me. But there's some great stuff like We Are It is a thumper. I got. The kind of I forget the tracks now. Is it Remember Me?
Is that
kind of on piano, kind of a big piano ballad. That's quite emotional. Yeah, it's a good album. I mean, it's kind of probably kind of standard Embrace. Do you know what I mean? I don't think they really do any kind of bad stuff, but it's another Embrace album. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, yeah. And I do, I agree with that. I think that they can have incredible moments. And like when, and it's really tricky because it's, you know, people work so hard to make this music. You know what I mean? Especially when you know a bit more about his story, having listened to, you know, the interviews and things. You know, it's then really, it just feels unfair for two idiots like me and you who don't know what we're talking about really, can't write songs, to then go, yeah, another Embrace album, decent. You know, if you're Embrace, how hard you must have worked crafting those songs, which ones do you keep, which ones do you get rid of? You know, every lyric, every, you know, decision that you make in crafting this thing. It's like when I talk about when I put out podcasts and, you know, I work so hard to edit them. You know, you put these things together, it takes a lot of time, and then you put it out and people go, oh, that's good. And you go, but
yeah,
or didn't like that, or like, you know, one thing about it. So it's really hard. And this is sort of why I've often shied away from sort of this sort of reviewing albums and things like that, because I do appreciate, you know, it's like film reviews, especially with a film. If you had make a $200 million film, they've worked so hard to put this thing together. You see it and go like, oh, it's fine. You know what I mean? Yeah. You think all those thousands of people worked so hard to make it. But yeah, but having said that, I agree. It's another very good Embrace album. I think that there's a couple of moments that I think are really good. There's sort of there's a track Rubble in the middle that's really good. And there's throughout it, there's the one I didn't really like was a song called Up, and the chorus, you know, because he's in a happier place in his life now. And there's always that thing about, does misery come from, you know, do you have to be miserable to make great art? And yeah, some of Embrace's best stuff comes from a time when, you know, Danny was really, really depressed and struggling with heartbreak. And that does tend to be the, you know, where those great songs come from. You know, I remember the Beautiful South song, Song for Whoever, when he talks about, like, thanks to all of these women that have broken my heart because they've made me millions of pounds. And, you know, it also reminds me of in the show Spaced, when Brian, the played by Mark Heap, loses his muse because he's actually happy. You know, and his art was all based on heartbreak and anger, fear, depression. And then he gets a girlfriend and he suddenly becomes happy. And it's like, if you are in that happy place, can you then still make really powerful music, or will it come out too cheesy and silly? Like, you know, a lot of people have, maybe if they don't like Wings, well, Paul was so happy in the 70s that, you know, you come out with silly love songs and things like that. And if you want heartbreak, then when you're happy, is that then going to ruin your creativity? And I think that does come through in a couple of songs, like that song Up. I felt that the last song is called For Kate, you know, which is literally, you know, just a love song to his wife, which I could kind of take or leave. But there's various points in the album where I think there are beautiful moments. There's one point where Richard kicks in and sings. And I think Richard's got a great voice, you know, and I think it's sad that he doesn't do more, to be honest, because I think when he does, you know, I like Danny's voice. He's not got the strongest physical singing voice, you know, and there's a couple of moments on here when he wobbles a little bit. And maybe if it was more of a mainstream release rather than kind of through their Patreon, maybe they would have tidied that up. But yeah, there's one point in, I can't remember which song it is, where Richard kicks in and it goes like, oh, wow, here we go. You know, it really lifts it up quite a lot. And I think similar to like the way that Serge and Tom interacted in Kasabian, maybe a bit more Richard, you know, at times in this album would have been a good thing, because it then sort of would lift it up or maybe give it a slightly different feel. But no, generally, I thought it was a really good, solid Embrace album with a lot of great moments. But maybe not quite at the level as some of their other stuff.
But now I know that we are in. Everything I lose, everything I win, everything I do, I know we are in. And everything I choose, everything I did, it brought me back to you. We'll be right back.
Yeah, it's just, I know what you mean. You probably feel like you're kicking a puppy, don't you, if you kind of slag it off? Because, like, they could have quit so many times, you know what I mean? Because in the nicest possible way, I don't know they've got enough of a fan base necessarily. They could, like, to keep them going. Well, clearly they have now, obviously. But you can imagine they're probably points they got, you know, this isn't worth it. But they clearly just do it for the love. And they could, you know, and there's a real kind of, yeah, I've said this before, like the relationship they've got with their fans and the patrons and stuff. But it's clearly just, they just do it because they love it and they do it because they want to do it. And for that reason alone, you know what I mean? It's all good. Yeah. But yeah, I think, yeah, it's there's some good stuff on it. You know, this if you like Embrace, you'll like this album.
It's preaching to the converted, isn't it? It's not good. Yeah. It's not gonna. Yeah, someone that didn't like Embrace is not going to suddenly turn on to Embrace because of this. And really, if you want to listen to an Embrace album, I think the first album is still the strongest. Yeah. And there is that one, I think it is the title track, that goes into like a na-na-na section. And you're like, no, not anymore. Mm. You know, and I love na-na-nas. You know, like All Around the World by Oasis is one of my favourite songs. Hey Jude. There's a time and a place for a na-na-na, but this one just felt a little bit like, nah. No, it felt a little bit.
Yeah.
If I was producing it, I would have been like, no, maybe leave that na na na's now for a bit.
But yeah, it makes it sound very out of time, doesn't it?
Yeah, yeah. Which it didn't necessarily in the rest of it. So cool. Yeah. All right. What else did we talk about? Oh, and a new band, Lounge Society.
I mean, I'll give you a bit of background on these. So these are a four-piece. They're younglings from Hebden Bridge. They are on Speedy Wonderground, which is Dan Carey's label. They've been going for quite a while. Generation Games was their breakthrough single. It was their first single a couple of years ago. You know, four boys. They are very specific not to be called post-punk, because they say, well, A, and quite rightly so, they're like, A, it limits you, and B, it's kind of meaningless now, because it's almost like a cliche. It's like, you know, calling something Britpop back in the 90s, like, it doesn't mean, it's a catch-all phrase, it doesn't mean anything now. I to give my kind of thoughts on it, there's a lot going on with it, a lot in the album. It's, having seen them live, they've kind of translated that, but they go everywhere, they're relentless, you know, the power of youth. The songs kind of constantly increase in tempo and go back round, and there's obviously a lot of influences. With this album, I will say it's a good album, but I think the next one will be a lot better. I think there's a lot of good stuff on there, but they're still a bit of a rough diamond at the minute. I think they kind of shaved some of the edges off and some of the overindulgence in terms of where they actually go and what kind of tricks they throw and tempos they go in. I think if they kind of shave those edges off, I think the next album will be something pretty good. This one is a good solid debut, but yeah, best to come, I would think.
Yeah, I thought it was interesting, and I definitely heard that kind of, you know, the joys of youth throughout it. I think it's the second track is like Blood Money, and I liked that, and the song. So the song Generation Game was the debut single, and that has got that whole point about what's the US going to do and things, and mm-hmm. it's got like a political edge to it. But then it felt a little bit like, you know, and I can imagine if I was 17, I'd go like, oh yeah, they're so political and they're so edgy. Whereas being 17 times two in a little bit, that it's like, okay, well done, boys. You know what I mean? I've got that. And it ties back into what we were saying about at what point you turn off from new music. Because I think this is my issue, is if I listened to this when I was 17, I would be like, these guys are amazing. They're so exciting, you know, and it's, I've got so many emotions inside me as a 17-year-old, and they're capturing that in their music. I don't have those emotions inside me as a 42-year-old, right? Mm. And so I hear them and I kind of go, oh, good. Yeah, I'm pleased that you've got all this youthful fizzing energy, and that's lovely for you boys, which is dreadful. But I think that sort of sums up the why people do fall off new music, I think, and sort of going back to that, because you can't, you know, you can be as intrigued and excited by it, but it's different when you're 16, 17, or maybe I'm just old and cynical, but that's my general kind of view on it and how the impact it had on me. I know what you mean about the next album will probably be better, because there are certain points in it where it kind of you know, it's sort of every song, they kind of tend to follow a formula. Reading about them, it's like they're a collective and they, you know, they sort of jam things out and stuff. And you can really hear that. And you can hear this definite Happy Mondays vibe, I think, in his vocals and stuff. Not quite as dancey as Happy Mondays, but, you know, he's got that sort of half-spoken, half-sung kind of drawl. And then often, like, it will start off with, like, a tight kind of guitar riff that's, you know, going through and has, like, a pulsing vibe to it. And you go, okay, I'm with this. And he'll be, like, talking over it. And then it will kick into sort of, you know, something else. And he'll start singing more. And then there'll be a bit more of a chorus. And it's like, cool, okay. But at various points, you know, they did then kind of kick into a different gear. I think there's a track called Remains, I believe, that was halfway through. And I was like, oh, wow. Okay, here we go. Stick with that. And it didn't. It then went off in a different direction. I was like, oh, okay, go that way. That way worked. You know, and there's, yeah, you can definitely hear bits of other bands in there. But yeah, I know exactly what you mean. I think there's a hell of a lot of potential in there. Maybe they just need to, mature a little bit, find a sort of a different sound, or maybe sort of focus on what works really well and then go down that route. But yeah, a lot of potential, I thought.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah. One's to watch. They do give good interviews as well. Like, obviously, I'm saying this because I've interviewed them, but they've got opinions. Do you know what I mean? They're not afraid to offer their opinions, as, you know, demonstrated by the music as well. They've got obviously a lot of political opinions, but I think they'll be that. It's quite refreshing in that respect. They do have, they do have things to say and opinions that, I mean, I broadly agree with, so it probably helps. But it's nice to have someone with a bit of not just the music about them. I recommend the ones to watch. Definitely see them live. If you can see them live, anyone's hearing this, you get a much better idea of what they're like, and it's a good show. Lastly, on the albums, just because you reminded me of it and made me listen to it, fucking Muse. Now, right, what is it, right? You know the expression, it's beyond parody.
Yeah.
What's beyond that? Because I think that's where Muse are at now. Like, I think they're maybe coming back round, so they're due in to go to parody again. I mean, I've got a lot of time for an album that has a track called We Are Fucking Fucked. Like, I've got a lot of time for that. But my God, I used to love Muse as well. Like, back in the noughties or 2000s, whatever, like, the four albums they released then were great, but I kind of lost touch with them a little bit, and I'm now reminded why.
Mm.
I just, fucking hell. Like, it just, like, there's nothing new about it at all whatsoever from them.
Yeah. I thought this was brilliant. No, yeah. I thought it was really bad. So the album's called Will of the People, and the first track is Will of the People. And it's The Beautiful People by Marilyn Manson. It goes like, the will of the people, the will of the people. It's like, if you're going to rip off something, don't literally have the same number of syllables. You know what I mean? Because it's exactly the same.
It's all.
But yeah, so reading about this, apparently they were asked by their record company to do a greatest hits album and they didn't want to. So they said, right, well, say what, we're going to record a new album, but with the idea of making a greatest hits album. So this is their idea of, if they sort of looking back over their whole career to kind of make a new greatest hits. Well, if this was the greatest hits of a band, I would not be delving into the individual albums, because this is just not a good collection of songs. I mean, obviously, you've got an unbelievably talented band in total, and especially Matt Bellamy as a singer and guitarist is brilliant. You know, he's such an incredible guitarist and vocalist. There's always been that issue of, is he just doing Thom Yorke? You know, he's always had that, you know, and and Thom Yorke has gone, you know, I will go off and do so many different things with my voice. Whereas it feels like Matt Bellamy's gone like, well, this is what I'm really good at in my voice. These big operatic things.
Just walking.
Yeah. Yeah. And, you know, and so that's what he tends to focus on. And there is always some pleasure in that, because you're hearing someone who's got an unbelievable talent using their talent. And so there's nothing wrong with that. But yeah, like the first three there are like Will of the People, Compliance and Liberation. And they've all kind of got this sort of vaguely political kind of thing. And then the last track is, yeah, We Are Fucking Fucked. So they're all sort of vaguely political, but I don't really know where they're going. And it was like, as I was sort of listening through those first three, I was like, okay, is this a concept album? Is this like a Rush? Was it 2112 or whatever? Like is this a concept album? Are we in a different world with, you know, like space aliens and they've, you know, banned music, or yeah, is that where we're going? Because if that was where we're going, I'd be fine with it. And my favorite song of theirs is Knights of Cydonia, which I think is genius, you know. And if you're going to do that, go for it. Make it a concept album, you know, absolutely. But sorry, you're going to jump in.
I was just going to say, there's a track on this, I forget what it's called now, but that is just, it just sounds like Knights of Cydonia. It's got the same kind of galloping thing. Obviously, nowhere near as good, but it's got the same kind of galloping build up to it. And that kind of, I think that probably put me off a little bit as well, because like you, I think that's amazing. I think that's a genius song.
Yeah, and if you're going to do that, great, go for it. Make it a concept. Make it, you know, have characters talking to each other and have, you know, a bloody write a play that goes along with it and an animated film, that, you know, go for it. But this is just like, it's got like three or four songs that kind of tick that box, but then the rest of it doesn't. And so it's like, okay, so you're not going the concept route then. And it also has the worst song I've heard all year, which is You Make Me Feel Like It's Halloween, which to me is the most cynical attempt at like, why don't we write a Halloween song? We can get that Thriller money.
Yeah.
You know, because that's the thing. When, you know, I don't know if you're like me, but every Halloween, I have a Halloween playlist. And it's got some, you know, obviously you've got your Thriller and your Ghostbusters, and I always feel like someone's watching me. But you search for Halloween and find sort of different Halloween-y type songs in there and stick it in. And so you could just know that from October now, everyone is going to do their Halloween playlist, find this Muse song, go, oh, Muse did a Halloween song, I bet that'll be good. And then it's going to get the clicks, you know. And it's, to me, I say it might not be the case, but I think it was a cynical, awful attempt to get Halloween clicks. And it's just so bad. You know, it's like, if you know, it feels like this is Halloween from the Tim Burton Nightmare Before Christmas, but just like, wait, is this a parody? Are you actually taking a piss now? Because if this was a comedy sketch about Muse, you know, you'd probably say, oh well, no, that's it's funny, but that's taking it too far. Whereas no, this is them. Yeah. This is them making an actual song.
Yeah. I think that's the thing that is, well, like, there's nothing original about it. Do you know what I mean? Like, the Will of the People, he's always been a big conspiracy theorist, Matt Bellamy, and yeah, he's always kind of, I mean, what is it, the Resistance album 2009, you know, there's a stuff about Eurasia, United States Eurasia on it, and you know, they will not control us. He's always been kind of like a part of people's thing. But that was 10 years ago. They're still doing it. And I suppose now, you know, we are fucking fucked. It's probably quite accurate because obviously it's a lot more depressing world than it was 10 years ago. But I don't know. That almost makes it worse. It's like, yeah, we know. Can you do something different? Do you know what I mean? Like, it's just that they clearly run out of ideas and steam a long time ago. And now just peddling, you know, this, as you say, kind of almost embarrassing at points stuff. And yeah, when you can factor in how good a band they are and how talented, you know, would not take anything away from Matt Bellamy. He's a phenomenal musician. But the complete lack of self-awareness is what gets me. Like, they must know, like, how this sounds in comparison to their own stuff. But they just seem happy just to do it. Mm. The tank is completely dry, one or the other. Yeah. But and the, yeah,
sorry, one point, sorry, yeah, and the keyboard sounds throughout it. And I know that kind of with Stranger Things and with the 80s kind of keyboardy sort of revival, there's this sort of keyboardy sounds are back in fashion.
Mm.
It just to me sounds really cheap and fake. Mm. You know, it's like, and also when you've got the best, you know, one of the best guitarists in the world, play the guitar. You know, and I know that you know, they've had hits over the years that have had that keyboard sounds and stuff in them, a bit more disco-y, you know, but, oh, God, I just thought it was dreadful. I've seen them live. I saw them live at Wembley Stadium. It was a corporate-y thing. I was, like, taking my clients, and it was at New Wembley in 2009, 10? No, it would have been...
Okay, they were one of the first bands. God, I went to the Wembley Stadium ones, but yeah, you're right. They did go to 2009, so I went to that gig as well. But yeah,
2009. Okay, so I was there, but I can't remember much of it because I was basically up and down to the bar getting beers for my clients. The main thing I remember from the day is it was the first time I'd ever seen those pints things where it fills from the bottom.
Okay,
and I was just amazed by it. So I remember coming back and you know, wife saying, "Oh, how was the gig?" Oh, it's amazing. If you send these pint things and they put them in and then you've instantly got the hook thing. It's like, well, the gig can't have been that good then if that was the thing that you remembered about it the most. But no, I thought it was, you know, he was wearing the sort of the shiny suit that would like shut out lights everywhere at the time as well, a few songs. And yeah, and he was able to rock Wembley Stadium, and to be a three piece and to rock Wembley Stadium like that was just incredible. And they were amazing talent. But yeah. Come on, boys.
Yeah, I agree with that. They're a phenomenal live band. I mean, I saw quite a few times there. I saw at Wembley and quite a few other times before that. And they're one of the best live bands I've ever seen. Like, as you say, with like a three piece, and just watching Matt Bellamy go and stuff he does is amazing. But I won't be going to see him live to do this album, I'm not saying.
No, not at all.
Fucking shit.
All right. I think we're done, aren't we?
I think that's a suitable place to finish.
Yes, well, we've had some good and some bad today. Well, anyway, excellent. Well, thank you very much for listening to the Rain podcast. And thank you very much, Richard.
Thank you, James. Thanks all for listening. Until next time.